This week on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, Paul Swartz and Yana Lambertini-Du from the Campaign for Lead-Free Water join the show to delve into the pressing issues of lead contamination in our water systems. Together, they explore how the public is informed about water safety, the obstacles to removing lead from our infrastructure, who holds the responsibility, and what will it generally take to resolve the issues. Don't miss this vital conversation on public health accountability and the journey towards lead-free water. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you find your podcast. Please like and subscribe so you don't miss the conversation. Welcome back. A very, very special podcast series that's kicking off today that will cover some extraordinary conversations that I think are really kind of earth-shattering. There's so many things going on in this nation today that people are sidetracked about local things that I think are even more important than all of these ancillary, I don't want to call them ancillary, but all the other things that are going on that clearly are important to our family lives, make no mistake about it. The major concern about health care, and not to mention so many other things, are paramount. All of these things that are taking place take us away from everyday things that are also important, and it's always been that local is always the most important thing to be concerned about because it's happening to you right here and now. And with that backdrop, this is the beginning of what we hope will be a very fruitful and in-depth conversation that will wake people up and realize that there are things that are going on inside of our nation that certainly are not right, they're not proper. And you just are amazed that those inside of our nation are aware of these types of things, and yet they go on. But without soldiers like Robert Miranda, Dr. Yana Lambertini-Du, and Paul Swartz, to name a few, we would not be as informed about the subject that we're going to be talking about, not just today, but we're going to be doing a major series on this. So we ask you guys to not only listen intently, but make sure you tell others about this, because we're going to dive deep into this over the next several months and hopefully be able to bring pressure to bear from those who have really done a disservice to you and I and our families. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce a couple of the main characters and people who will be donning these airways to give you the information that is, again, critically important to you and your families. I begin by introducing the one and only Dr. Yana Lambertini-Du. Good morning to you, Dr. Lambertini-Du. How are you? Let's talk a little bit about who you are.
Good morning, Earl. It's so good to be here with you again. Again, my name is Yana Lambertini-Du. I am an anthropologist. I am a co-founder of the Campaign for Lead-Free Water. And that is a group that brings together community members from different parts of the country who are working to rid their drinking water of lead and to have a more health protective regulation on the subject. And I am also affiliate faculty in the Department of Science, Technology, and Society at Virginia Tech. Again, it's really great to be here with you this morning.
Well, you know, and so you are very humble. But clearly your history of knowledge is far exceeds the amount of time that we have allotted for this. But in time, hopefully people will be able to see the magnitude of your studies and the impact that you've had and continue to have. My second guest today is none other than Mr. Paul Swartz. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Good morning, Earl, and just so pleased to be kicking off this series and using the good graces of your show and welcome to your audience.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about who Paul Swartz is.
Yeah, so I've been working on a variety of water issues, everything from lead in water, which is the subject of the work we're doing today, to other drinking water contaminants and making sure that our lakes, rivers, and streams and wetlands are clean and functional and helping humans and other living things exist. And I've been doing that since 1979. I, too, am a co-founder, along with Yana and many other people, of the Campaign for Lead-Free Water. And I have a degree in political science and am a trained community organizer.
So you're a politrickster.
Indeed, I have a degree in what I call the dark arts.
All right. That'd probably be the last time we'll have a little light-hearted this on such a serious conversation. I want to begin with, we'll start with you, Dr. Yana. How did you start working on lead in drinking water? What led you to, no pun intended, seeing this as something that was so critically important?
Yeah, Earl, I think my story is similar to many other residents from all across the country who are working on lead in drinking water. I started this work 20-something years ago in Washington, D.C. I was living there with my family and my infant daughter at the time, and realized that there was a serious lead in water problem before it was ever announced in the our newspapers, and certainly before our local water utility said anything about it. And eventually, because of other Washington, D.C. residents' work, there was a comprehensive, a thorough Washington Post investigation that exposed that Washington, D.C. had been experiencing a historic lead in water crisis for 2.5 years with astronomical levels of lead coming out of people's taps, whether people had a lead service line or not. Because there's lead in a lot of different kinds of plumbing in homes and other buildings, taps in Washington, D.C. were dispensing lead in the tens and hundreds and even thousands parts per billion, when we really know and have known for a long time that there is no safe level of lead in drinking water. EPA's health-based standard for lead in water is zero. So this was a very serious crisis that we had experienced, and it was a crisis that our water utility and our local health department and also the Environmental Protection Agency, our local office in Philadelphia, had failed to adequately inform residents. So people who, under normal circumstances, would have really wanted to know and who would, want to avoid exposures were not granted that information or that right. And so it was after the Washington Post expose that, again, came out of the hard work of residents who were investigating themselves this issue. I realized that you know, this was a very serious issue, and that most importantly, we had been conditioned to trust both local and federal government agencies to protect us from serious contamination and potentially lifelong harm, when in reality, these agencies, whose very mission it is to promote public health, actually knowingly betrayed us for 2.5 years. And to just add one more thing here is that several years later, and after painstaking work by scientists and residents, what was eventually published in peer-reviewed scientific literature was that the Washington, D.C. crisis from 2001 to 2004 had resulted in over 800 cases of childhood lead poisoning, and was associated with potentially over 42,000 cases of childhood lead poisoning, and also was associated with a 37% spike in fetal deaths. Very, very serious public health harm.
You know, Paul, there are all sorts of crosses to bear. You're in Washington, D.C. You got a political science background. Why? How did you get dragged into this?
Yeah, Earl. So I spent a good chunk of my life growing up here in D.C. and the D.C. area. This is home for a military brat. My dad was in the Air Force and I was born overseas, but it's my adopted home for many decades. And I had moved in from the Northern Virginia suburbs to D.C. with an 8-year-old son and my wife, and I had been working for a number of years as the National Water Policy Coordinator for a large environmental nonprofit called Clean Water Action, working on the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act, and had been working with organizers in around the country in many states. And mostly in D.C., the local people who live here, the 700,000 residents of the District of Columbia, the national organizations don't pay attention to the material conditions, the quality of our drinking water or our lakes, rivers, and streams. And while I knew that there was lead in the water in the District of Columbia and in other places around the country, I did not know when I moved in that I was moving in just before a major 2.5-year cover-up was going to be underway because of a change in the chemistry of the water that the water utility made, and that there had been lead coming out of people's taps and in their pipes for you know, many, many decades even before then. I had no idea about the extent or the breadth of the lead and water contamination. And so as Yana Lamridi-Du said, residents sort of figured it out when they were their kids were getting hammered, and they figured out that it was from their drinking water, and that the lead poisoning was not coming from paint, soil, and dust in the main in this period. This is 2001 to 2004. And so when residents outed the water utility in January of 2004, it really caught me, and someone who'd focused on drinking water and drinking water in D.C. by surprise about the magnitude of the health harm. This is 10 years before Flint, and we had 20 to 30 times more lead flowing out of our taps than Flint. Now, we didn't know about Flint at that time, but we had over 200 articles in the Washington Post alone that documented the nature of the problem locally and nationally. And we had all sorts of bad actors, from the water utility to our Department of Health, to the Center for Disease Control that faked a study saying that there was no relationship between any amount of lead in water and elevated amounts of lead in kids' blood, for instance. And they published that in the premier health journal of the United States, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, misleading people both locally and nationally, something that we had to work to turn it around. But I'll tell you, it was quite a shock to people here. I went to the first public meeting that parents organized in a Catholic church basement right next to the Library of Congress. And there were 150 parents and grandparents and kids in strollers trying to figure out, residents of the Capitol Hill neighborhood who were trying to figure out what this meant for their kids or for their pregnancies or for the prospects of how the people in the community were being hammered by the lead in water. It was a real shock to the system. And so I used my capacity as the national drinking water coordinator within a national environmental group to engage locally. And that's when I met Yana and when we started working together. And since then, we have worked not only to protect our families and our neighbors and our community, but to learn lessons from that and to document what's going on in other communities. And in founding the Campaign for Lead-Free Water back in 2016, hooking up with Robert Miranda, meeting him in person, and learning from people around the country who were trying to figure out what their exposures were and what they could do to protect their families and communities, and learning from each other and backing each other up. So in this podcast, we hope to shine a big light on the arrangements of power and how they operate in our communities locally, at the state level, and nationally. But I just want to say that regardless of what's happening at the national level with Trump and with the courts and all those things being very important, that we still have power and we still have responsibility to make a difference in the material conditions or the concrete things that are going on in our lives, like the water that's flowing through our taps and that we're using for cooking and for mixing with our baby's formula when we do that, and drinking as well. And we can make a difference and have some victories. And I'm really optimistic that if we get together, we put our heads together, we get good information, and we use our capacity at the local level, whether you're in a big city or a suburb or out in the countryside, this issue is an issue that cuts across Republican, Democrat, race and class. This pernicious contaminant that everybody can pronounce, lead, the data suggests it's almost at every tap in the United States. And so we have an opportunity to uncover that and to talk about the solutions that we can implement right now and the policy solutions we need to pull together for at the state, local, and local and federal level. And I'm really looking forward to this.
So, go ahead,
audience, Paul. Earl, and with you.
So we're so excited here at Civic Media to be able to bring this life-changing and life, altering truth to the American people. I just have to say, Dr. Yana, you know, why does lead in drinking water pose such a concern? And so a couple things I want to kind of chime in before we let you answer that question. Most people think, when they think of lead, they think big chunks of metal. And they don't think of any way that could possibly be inside of the water that you drink. We see lead as huge pieces of metal. So why is it, and why does it pose such a major health concern? And what kind of lead are we talking about?
Yeah. So lead, you know, has been used and to very, you know, in very small amounts continues to be used to make plumbing materials. It was used to make what many people are now familiar with, which is lead service lines or lead laterals. And these are the pipes that connect the water mains under streets to individual homes. And those pipes were made of 100% pure lead. But lead also is used for other plumbing materials, like leaded brasses and fixtures, lead solder. And so, as my colleague Paul said, lead-bearing plumbing is actually prevalent throughout the country, and is present in most buildings. The concern with lead in drinking water is that, of course, when it leaches from this plumbing, in most cases, it isn't visible, and it doesn't have a specific taste or smell. But it certainly can cause serious health harm. Many people probably already know that lead can interfere with the development of the central nervous system. And so that is specifically the brain and the spinal cord. And this can cause neurological disorders such as attention deficit disorder, reduced capacity to learn, difficulty succeeding in school. Lead is also associated for fetuses with miscarriage and fetal death or stillbirth. Also, it's associated with premature birth. For adults, it's associated with kidney damage, with high blood pressure, with cardiovascular problems, so heart issues. And when it occurs during pregnancy in utero, lead exposure can actually result in criminal behavior in adulthood. And some of lead's adverse health effects are irreversible, which is really why, and this is something that, you know, most physicians will say, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says, EPA says, the best way to avoid health harm from lead is to prevent exposure. And this makes the issue a little bit challenging because the task ahead, and as Paul said before, certainly there we have power to do things, but what we're really asked to do is to take precautions to prevent exposure to a metal that actually usually is not visible when it comes out of a tap, and it doesn't taste like anything specific or smell like anything specific. So in some ways, it's this invisible threat that poses a very serious public health risk and requires action, but it's really not that easy to, you know, to discern, to look at, or to touch when it's coming out of one's tap.
You know, Paul, when we listen to Dr. Yana explaining in a manner that all of us can understand the inherent dangers in this, so this has gone on for centuries, and people have been impacted and affected by it before it even reached the point where it is now, where people are cognizant or being, you know, educated on the ills of it. But I guess I would ask you, you know, we hear about the lead water, but the lead water seems almost as if it's an afterthought because they talk about the paint and the dust. Why doesn't the water, the issue with the lead water, rise to the level that the lead paint issue did back in the 1960s and 70s?
Right. That's a great question, Earl. You know, why is it not as visible or known about or acted on in the way that getting rid of the other important sources of
or gasoline or lead to gasoline.
Yeah, yeah. You know, sort of how come it's take just happened now, right? And I would note just a few things to put some context on it. One is what Jana said, right? That lead is not visible. And water infrastructure, the pipes inside our home and outside our home are also non-visible. We don't think about them a lot, right? Just the water right. flows out. We assume if there was a problem, they, whoever that is, would tell us that there's a problem. And I think also there are some perverse incentives not to tell people that there's an issue. Right. So the people who mine the lead and who smelt it and who are looking for markets, they knew, as did the governments know. We've known for 2000 years that lead and water don't mix since Roman and Greek times. And when the water utility from Milwaukee and D.C. and other water utilities got together in the late 19th century to found the American Water Works Association, an association of all these water utilities, one of the committees that they put together back then was on lead and water. So they knew there was a problem, but they persisted to expand the use of lead and water and manufactured ignorance about it. There's these ads out there that they ran in magazines and in other places that talked about how great lead was as a material to use and how it was going to provide health benefits from people, even though they knew that there was problematic. And in terms of the people who mined the lead and smelted it and looked for markets, they were also putting lead in paint and lead in gasoline and harming people that way. But what ended up happening was the rise of a movement to remediate lead and to get lead out of homes and other buildings, they just focused myopically on lead in paint and soil and dust. And the law that regulates paint and soil and dust is not the same as the law that regulates drinking water. And the law on drinking water didn't get set in place until later. And so we've had this, the water utilities have used people's knowledge about the source of lead from paint and soil and dust as sort of a fig leaf to hide behind and to say that lead and water really isn't that important of a source. And what we need to do is turn the focus back over here. So it comes from a number of different places. It comes from the self-interest of the water utilities. It comes from the self-interest of the folks working on paint, soil, and dust just to focus on that, or the ignorance about what the flaws are with what the water utilities are doing and what the regulations do to protect people. And I think when we get Robert Miranda and the Fresh Water for Life Action Coalition and Milwaukee Get the Lead Out Coalition, we'll hear more about what the specific history is in Milwaukee that created those conditions of ignorance and that put the light on paint, soil, and dust, but not water. That's something that we're going to want to really look into in more depth and uncover the political arrangements and the manufacturing of ignorance there.
You know, Dr. Jana, from the scientific perspective of the knowledge of you and colleagues that will be joining us from across this nation and across the globe to talk about the impact of what has transpired and what is happening with fresh water supply in this nation. The EPA's 2024 lead and copper rule improvements were supposedly earmarked to fix the problems associated as these things have been brought up, brought to their attention. And so I would ask you, since the EPA has now admitted that these are issues and major problems, You would think that that's kind of a capitulation to say, yeah, what you're saying is true. But is that in fact what they're doing? Are they capitulating, or is this just another one of those things, change of hands, and it's much ado about nothing?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think that for listeners who might not have followed this story closely, the first regulation in the United States addressing lead in drinking water was promulgated in 1991. So we've got a few decades long history of lead in drinking water being regulated at the federal level. The initial regulation had many serious weaknesses, and it's been really communities on the ground who have spearheaded the fight for a more science-based and public health protective regulation. The latest version of the federal regulation, which is called the Copper Rule Improvements, is a regulation that takes this health protective step a little bit further. It's a regulation that requires, and that's very good, the replacement of all lead service lines or all lead laterals within 10 years for most communities. And also has other provisions that make the regulation a little bit tighter and a little more health protective. However, it's a regulation that, in my opinion, doesn't go far enough. And I'll only mention two things about it. We could sit here and have multiple conversations about this regulation, but two things I'd like to highlight. The first is that this is a regulation that mandates lead service line replacement, but doesn't fully fund it. And so we have communities all across the nation that will be required to replace these lead laterals many times without the money to do so. And what we know from history and the history of environmental health and environmental justice is that when there's mandates but no money, many times it's really the people who pay the price for the shortage in funds. And the price can be paid in multiple different ways, including having lead laterals just left in the ground, or misinforming people about removing them properly or not removing them at all. There can be all sorts of things that can go on that at the end of the day can be damaging to the people. The other big drawback, in my opinion, of this new regulation is that it doesn't level with the public. It doesn't tell people, and it doesn't require water utilities to disclose to people that lead-bearing plumbing is present in almost every U.S. home and other building, school, office building, restaurant, businesses, any place. And that as long as there's any lead in plumbing, that people who consume water from that plumbing are at risk of exposure to small and very high, low and very high levels of lead. And so, unfortunately, this new regulation continues to, and is going to continue to leave many people with a false assurance of safety, that because either lead service lines are slowly being replaced or because their water utility is meeting regulatory standards, which are not public health protective, that their water is safe to drink. And that is something that we are hoping that through our work and through this podcast and the power of the people that Paul mentioned earlier, that we can start challenging this master story, this master narrative that we're being fed, so that people can actually know the truth. And if they care to protect themselves from exposure, know what actions they can take to prevent these exposures. And I think that's part of what I consider one of the most grave injustices around this issue, is that we know what the problem is, we know how serious it is, we know how prevalent it is, we know how to address it. It is not difficult to address it. It is not difficult to prevent exposures. And yet we are still, decades later, decades after the initial lead and copper rule was passed in 1991, we are still refusing to level with the public about this issue and to give people simple tools to protect themselves from exposure. This, in some ways, is officially sanctioned, officially forced lead poisoning for no reason.
You know, Paul, Dr. Yana just encapsulated the fact that 150 years after the first installments of the lead service lines were known and those things were put in place. And yet we are still here experiencing the same kinds of things. Could it possibly be, Paul, that, you know, people are expendable in a capitalistic society, to a corporation? And because, again, lead being what it is and inherent dangers that they possess, lead is still being manufactured. They're still doing the exact same thing. And that's why it's so critically important that we marshal the forces of the American people, hopefully through this podcast with people like you, Yana, and your connections across this nation and across this globe to bring the necessary power, to bring the manufacturers of this hellacious product to its knees, and then our politicians who are aware of this and force them to do what's right by the people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the risks are all acceptable for the lead industry and for the water authorities and for the regulators. And this failure to give basic information, which doesn't cost a lot of money, to do, you know, to tell people that lead is pervasive. It's suggested by the data in almost every building, as Dr. Lambrini-Du said, and that we've got a, you know, out of the box technology that most people can afford, not everyone, and if used right, can reduce the lead pretty regularly to the health level, which is zero. And I think there are perverse incentives. Only one of them is profit. The other is not being transparent or accountable, so that your institution isn't held liable or seen as not doing their job. And so there are cozy relationships between water authorities and regulating agencies. A lot of those authorities, Earl, are not even private businesses. They're publicly regulated. And you know, as they're quick to point out, they've got kids too, and they drink the water as well. And so the question of why it is that it's still going on all these decades and now centuries later is a really fundamental question, and something where we need to challenge that narrative that says everything's okie dokie, that, you know, just because we're not Mexico or some other country that has, financial or developmental problems, that we're the richest country in the world, that our water is okay to drink. And it's just sort of a travesty of justice that we continue to knowingly poison our population. If it was another country doing that to us, we'd call it terrorism. And we would react with trillions of dollars or hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons and other things. But because we're doing it to ourselves, we just call it the cost of doing business.
You know, Dr. Yana, as we began this long trek to educate people from across this nation and hopefully from across the earth, about the fact that this has gone on, continues to go on, and in all the years that you and Paul have been fighting this fight, and others, and these organized organizations, campaign for lead-free water, and here in Milwaukee, Get the Lead Out with Robert Miranda and other organizations all across the nation, certainly have been able to bring some attention, but our goal and our focus, I would say, in these podcast is to move it beyond having a few conversations in areas that don't bring the proper attention to the American people. Because what we're looking for, I guess I would say and ask you, is we need an army of citizens to raise their voices, and the best way to do that is that they're informed. Is that part of the reason why we think this podcast series is going to be so important?
That's right. You know, it's very difficult to address an environmental contaminant like lead in drinking water without the public's active understanding and activism. And that is because, unfortunately, as Paul also just mentioned, the powers that are writing our regulations and that are funding mandates and that are making decisions for us have shown again and again and again over many years that they are unwilling to place the public's health and protection at the very top of their priority list. And so it's really up to us to decide that we are demanding that our families and communities and our nation's health is placed at the top of the list. The idea that in 2025, we are still having people all across the country exposed to both low and high levels of lead in drinking water on a regular basis, only because they don't know that that's what's going on, is really something that we are hoping to redress, we're hoping to correct. And just so that everybody knows too, the lead and copper rule and the lead and copper rule improvements, these are the, you know, Environmental Protection Agency regulations that have been passed to protect people from lead in water. They incorporate public education, leveling with the public about this issue as one of the pillars of the regulation. And yet, how this pillar, how this requirement of leveling with the public, of issuing public education, how it translates in practice is something that is very concerning, because rather than fully enlightening people and supporting people to make the right health protective decisions, it is, as Paul was just saying earlier, mostly manufacturing ignorance and issuing false assurances of safety and continuing to leave people vulnerable to unnecessary exposure. So we're very much hoping through this podcast to begin to change the conversation and to allow people to take this matter into their own hands.
You know, Paul, there are going to be a myriad myriad of different directions and levels that we'll be engaged in during these podcasts. But one that I don't want us to leave out, especially in the early stages of this, is that there are, you know, opportunities. We don't have to stay in this kind of situation and wait for the government to morally come to the realization that poisoning the American people is not the right thing to do and that we can't get this fixed because of the costs associated with it. I think it's important that we let people know that there are opportunities, Paul, through filters and other things that we'll be talking about in these podcasts where you can kind of protect yourself. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah, I mean, that's such an important thing. We're not, our hands are not tied. We can do something today to protect ourselves. And I just want to throw out one nugget to begin with, and we're going to come back to this over and over again, which is that there are a number of filters that you can put on your countertop in your kitchen or mount on a faucet, in a refrigerator. These point of use or POU devices are certified for lead reduction by the National Sanitation Foundation. And so if you wanted to go tomorrow to a hardware store, if you looked for NSF certification number 42 and NSF certification number 53 with a claim for lead reduction, and this would be on the box of the filter, and you installed those properly, you could pretty much assure that as long as you're operating it right, and we'll talk about that, and maintaining it right, that you're going to remove or get close to that health protective number that Yana said EPA established based on the science of zero parts per billion. And so that's really important. At the same time, Earl, there are dark forces moving out there in the world. Right now, the American Water Works Association on September 12th, along with the National Chamber of Commerce, filed motions in Federal Circuit Court in the District of Columbia. That's the court just below the Supreme Court that has national jurisdiction, to say that the lead and copper rule improvements put in place by the Biden administration was not feasible to implement, and that they couldn't pay for the part of the lead lateral or service line that was under private property. And so they're trying to get out from underneath those requirements and to put, along with the health problem on top of people, put the financial cost, as Yana talked about, back on top of people in our communities.
Which is really substantial.
Which is really substantial. And so, you know, we're not talking about a large cost compared to many other things, like what they're spending on deploying the Texas National Guard to Illinois today, or a variety of other, quote, priorities of our federal governments and our state governments. This is something across partisan divides, across ideologies, across rural, urban, suburban, it affects everyone. It affects everyone. You know, I'm 66 and I have hearing loss, and some of that hearing loss because of exposure to lead. I have cardiological problems, and I can't point to the little leaded soldiers that I sucked on when I was a kid that gave me that problem. But I know that my exposure to lead over time could be part of the cause of that type of thing. So it's very personal. It's embedded in our bodies and in our kids' bodies. And we're not naked and self-defenseless in this, but we got to get smart about and strategic about how we get together to do what Yana talked about, the public education piece, to do the legal piece with allies who are involved in that space, and to make sure fundamentally that people have the information they need both to protect themselves and to do the politics and the public policy that force this at higher in the priorities and get it taken care of. This is not rocket science. On some level, it's, you know, it's easy as saying lead and water don't mix and we shouldn't have them in contact with each other. And then when you get down under the layers of the onion and you go a little deeper, there's some complexity. So we're going to do that. And we're going to make sure people have the tools and the connections to make waves and to change the material conditions that affect our lives. You know, this is basic organizing 101. And I think this podcast and the work we do with you and others who we bring onto the show could be a fundamental piece of changing that narrative and making a better future for us all.
So unfortunately, we have to leave it there for now. And we just want people to know that you should be looking out for, again, this series that Civic Media and the Earl Ingram Show are going to be providing this kind of, I think, life-altering and life-changing information with, people like Dr. Yana Lambertini Du and Paul Swartz and all of those people that they have encountered along this journey of waking people up to what clearly is something we have to fix. Guys, thank you very much. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Earl. You can go to the campaignforleadfreewater.org to get much more information.
Thank you, Earl.
All right, we'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.